Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
The boss always has been, always will be. The great Adam White's ready to roll on a Wednesday morning. Morning, boss man! You hate when I say that.
No, I do, because it's not true.
Well, you're my boss.
Well,
are you or are you not my boss?
Well, I'm not sure.
Are you or are you not my boss?
Did you try and get on the website last night, on some of the news websites last night, and you couldn't because there was some sort of issue?
You're a professional deflector. That's what you are. Well done. No, didn't bother, wouldn't bother, and don't know what you're talking about.
What do you mean you wouldn't bother? Trying to get onto the Age website or...
Well, I want to get on the Age website at night time.
Just to
get the paper in the morning.
Well, yeah.
I walk into the office and there's the papers. That's what happens in the morning when you get here at the towers.
There's all sorts of problems.
No, I have heard some sort of outages.
I think it might be back happening again.
Oh, no. Is it?
Potentially. I'm not sure. Anyway, millage event, Daniel.
Oh, no. We've reconnected. We've reconnected around here.
Yeah. Big millage event.
Are you more excited about that or the outage?
The millage.
Right, of course.
But in all seriousness, it could be quite dangerous.
What do you mean? An event that's gone or an event that's coming?
Event that is coming.
Right, okay.
So there was only actually 4 mills in the city gauge overnight, whereas in particularly some of the eastern suburbs, there was as many as sort of 14 and a half, up to 16 and a half, just looking through it now. So eastern suburbs got a lot more than the city or even to the west. But down in Gippsland, there could be as much as 200 mils over the next couple of days. So today could be the wettest day of the lot.
But that's where we're racing today.
I know.
We're racing at Sale and Troy's already given us a winner.
I know.
Well, this is not ideal.
So Troy's...
Is it a wet tracker?
Well, I don't know. We probably need to know that.
I'm going to have a bit of a look at that.
Well, you'd have to say almost that there might not be a race meeting based on that weather prediction. So we'll see how we go.
That's not what we're after.
Well, it's today or sort of later today into tomorrow, I think, is going to be the worst weather down in Gippsland. So
definitely an interesting 48 hours of weather.
Thanks, Jane.
Where did that Who come is that? From? Is that Jane Bunn?
Absolutely, it's Jane Bunn.
Goodness me, she was really up and about.
Anyway, so everyone out there, keep safe. And I'm being serious because not only is there going to be a lot of rain, but there's going to be a lot of winds. So, yeah.
Righto. Well, Stonefield, which is race 4, number 6, for Troy Corstens, he told us about this yesterday. He wanted to get involved yesterday with this horse because he's 3 runners yesterday and all up place didn't quite work
out. But he didn't sense a lot of confidence
No, I think he just threw something at us just to keep us happy.
You know what he probably should have done? He actually probably should have said to us, no, not today. Because it affected our streak.
No, you can't. You can't do that.
Well, you could have. We should have got another trainer on.
No, you can't. Once you're on...
You've got Robbie Griffiths on. He had a win yesterday.
Where is Robbie? I've spoken to Robbie for a while. I need to get Robbie on. It's raced on a heavy track, our horse, and it's come second. Second at Kilmore on a heavy track. Over 1,100 metres. Last time out. That was 20 days ago. Stepping up to the 14.19 today. And the heavy track, we imagine, at Sale. Well, at the moment, it's a good 4, so nothing's happened just yet.
No. Well, we'll find out more when we speak to the track manager around about 5 to 7 this morning.
Right. Yes, that's exactly what we'll do. We'll find out more about that. Did you see? Now, we spoke to Simon Mitchell yesterday, the coach of the South East Melbourne Phoenix, and we knew that he had to lose by less than 80 to qualify for the NBL Finals.
And they lost.
And they lost, but only by 10.
Yes.
So he had 69 up his sleeve.
Yes.
So he was happy about that.
So does that change, though, who they played, didn't it?
Well, there was going to be a different outcome either way. Yes, yeah. You're right. So now what we have is an all-Melbourne semi-final series. So they'll play United Star. I'm not sure when that starts, that series. I'll have to check that. Yes, I am. Friday night. Friday night they'll play. And they don't have to travel to Perth. So we spoke about this yesterday, that had they won, they would have finished third and played Perth in a home and away final series. But Perth would have had the home advantage. It would have had to travel a few times. They're literally the furthest point of the country away. So that would have been a disaster. So I'm not saying they tanked. I'm not saying that. But I don't think there's too much angst.
No, but if they were to beat United, they'd still then have to play Perth in a grand final series.
Yeah, but...
Probably.
No, well, yes. Although Brian Gorgon's got a knack, you know.
Oh, yeah, true.
He's got a knack of doing big things in big times with Illawarra.
It does feel, and I'm not saying I'm a basketball aficionado, but it does feel that the best four got through.
Well, yeah, the only other one that you would consider being in that grade. Now, if you look at the ladder, Sydney finished on equal wins with South East Melbourne.
Yeah.
And then Brisbane were only a win behind. Then there's a gap. So there's a top six, and then there's the bottom three who are a bit of rubbish. Certainly this year anyway. So Sydney and Brisbane were within a game of the top four with a bit of percentage action. So, but I think you're right. Anecdotally, from the games that I've seen, that they have been the best four teams, funnily enough, through to the finals. So that starts Thursday night. Perth and Illawarra's game one and tomorrow night. And then we've got Melbourne and United and the Phoenix on Friday night. So it's actually Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the first four games. What's after that? That's good. So you got one a night for the next four nights. That's good business. That's good scheduling. We like that.
Yep.
I'm excited about that for the NBL finals. You don't seem as excited, but no. Come with me along the way when we get there.
Well, you say it's good scheduling. It kind of is, but there is also AFL football Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday night as well this week. So
yeah,
it's
But it's only round 13 by stuff, so, you know, people will be... There's plenty of people not watching.
Okay.
Plenty of people not watching.
Okay.
Trust me. You watch. Wait till the numbers come out. I know you're a numbers man. Hey, speaking of numbers man, I'm not sure if Mark Rudin was a numbers man, but our man let go yesterday by Western United.
Yeah, they say it was mutual. Often things aren't mutual, are they? But they've said it is mutual. It is a bit disappointing. Now, I mean, I think for him particularly, I think he was good for the game. Now, I know at the end of the day, the coach has to win. And Western United had a pretty disappointing season in the end.
Mm.
But he was someone that was good to talk to on this program. We spoke to him a number of times. He's came into the studio. And he was able, you know, someone that spoke his mind, not just about his own team, but about the game.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm a bit disappointed to hear that, to be honest. And again, also, Half, Western United have only been around for 2 years.
It's the second year, yeah.
And the first year was obviously heavily dominated by the coronavirus and, you know, even a bit of this year now. It's harsh on anyone, I think, to lose their job under those circumstances. You know, we'll talk more about David Teague shortly, but David Teague's a bit the same. I just don't think that you're getting a really appropriate representation of whether they can coach or not based on what's happened through the last 12 to 18 months because it's been such exceptional circumstances.
Yep. It's quite a remarkable finish to the season for them. They lost their last eight.
And that's where you don't know what's going on behind the scenes because that's not good. So, whether
can we just keep that on file?
Yeah, whether he has lost the players, whether there is some sort of internal issues that you don't know about. When you said it, I didn't realise it was quite that bad. I knew it was bad, but I didn't know
that's
it was that
not
bad.
Good.
No. But yeah.
That's the mastery of the understatement quite right there. You make me laugh early doors. It's good. It's a good start to the day. Happy about that. Yeah, so poor old Marky Mark is Gonski, but hopefully he'll stay in the game because he's very good at Fox when he's doing the broadcasting, or he gets another job. I don't know how many other jobs will be going around next season in the A-League. What's happening with the Victory? Do we know what's... Oh, they've got a new coach.
Yeah, they have.
Who's that?
They have.
I've forgotten who that is.
The guy that was coaching Western Sydney Wanderers.
Oh, yes, Tony Popovich. Yes, yes, that's right.
Perth.
That's right.
Yep.
Now, but we'll get back to the news from Carlton in yesterday shortly. Some action at Roland Garros.
Well, there's action at the moment between Tsitsipas and Medvedev, and you'd think that whoever was to win that match would probably end up going through to the final, probably. Tsitsipas would go into that match as the clear favourite because Medvedev doesn't have a great record on clay. But the game's going... It's been pretty good tennis so far. Tsitsipas won the first set. and had a break in the second set. But that was sort of just a short time ago.
Back on serve.
Back on serve, yeah. Medvedev's just starting to lift his game a little bit. One of the other key matches was the men's quarterfinal with involving Zverev. He won 3 in straight sets, only lost 6 games.
Against Davidovich Fokina.
That's David Davidovich.
David Davidovich.
Sort of doing a little bit of tennis action. So he, he is 3. So he's probably be Zverev and I would say Tsitsipas. And then you've got Nadal and Djokovic in the top half.
What about in the women's draw? What's happening over there on that side of things? Because we've lost Serena. We've lost, Naomi didn't get started. Ash Barty went out early doors.
Yeah.
We spoke yesterday about this being the one that names that we don't know too much about
exactly right.
Popping up.
Well, Zidanzic got through 8-6 in the third, beating Badoza. So again, that's not, there's no big names there. That's a quarterfinal, and then in the other quarterfinal, it was a win to Pavlyuchenkova, who won 9-7 over Rybakina in 3 sets. She was the 21st seed versus the 31st seed. So, look, that often happens on the clay. And as I said to you earlier in the week, this is the thing with women's tennis at the moment. There's just this big group of women where there's not much difference between them. Outside, say, Osaka and Barty, and maybe Serena Williams. Halep didn't play this tournament, but outside of that, there's just this massive group, particularly European players, formerly of the Eastern Bloc, from Russia, that you just, there's just a massive group of them.
There is.
It's hard to tell them apart, but you just forget which one's which because they've all got similar names and they all play a similar brand of tennis.
Joe Montemurro was the FIFA World Women's Coach of the Year back in 2019. Led Arsenal to the quarterfinals of the Champions League. He's done great things. They've qualified again, but now he's got a new job at Juventus. And I reckon that's super exciting. He's a Parade College champion as well back in the old days. And he joins us on the line this morning. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, guys.
Great to have you with us. Now, we've spoken to you a couple of years ago, I reckon, when you were doing the great things at Arsenal and you were the World Women's Coach of the Year from FIFA. Now you've moved to Juventus. Tell us about why you've moved to one of the most pressured jobs in women's sports.
I think there's always opportunities as coaches and you always want to test yourself and you always want to be... go to those next levels and have these amazing opportunities. I've been blessed and honoured to have been given this chance. I just felt it was the right opportunity at the right time. Honoured to be given the opportunity.
You spent a lot of time at Arsenal in the WSL and did great things there with championships and all the like. The different competition. How long have you been, or how much do you know about the different competition?
I think when you are working in Europe, you tend to keep an eye on a lot of the leagues. Definitely the Italian league is one that there's been a fair bit of investment from both the clubs and the federation. So it's a league that's growing. But to be honest, I was extremely impressed by the project at Juventus and what they've been doing over the last few years. They are the champions and... they want to now start making some headway in Europe, and I just felt it was the right opportunity. So, as I said, I'm privileged, proud, and very honoured to be here.
So we've seen, Joe, over the last probably 5 or 6 years, a real sort of influx in the interest in women's sport. We know that it's absolutely growing in the UK, but what's it like when it comes to a team like Juventus? What is the interest like in women's football?
Well, look, obviously, historically, the Serie A and the men's football has been the power and the image of Italian football, and I think it's obviously going to take a little bit of time to break that, but the reality is that ever since the Italian national team did well at the last World Cup, there has been major investment and major interest, and the reality is that in Europe at the moment, the leagues are very, very strong. With the onset of the Champions League and that also growing and changing this year, it's become a mainstream sort of scenario that clubs are are now looking at branding their women's team in a way where they know that they benefit from a whole of football brand, both with the men's and women's. So, effectively, a lot of the big clubs and the big brands and the big names are seeing it as a major vehicle to explore their own brands worldwide. So it is definitely growing.
And the quality of the football, the quality of the athletes that you're going to be working with, are they comparable to an Arsenal or to a Chelsea that we think of, particularly with Sam Kerr playing for Chelsea?
Oh, look, it's always hard to say. In the Juventus team, we've got pretty much the a major block of the Italian national team. They have been champions the last 4 years, and they have competed quite well in Champions League level. So, obviously there are levels of investment. Chelsea, probably invest 4, 5, 6 times more than what Juventus do, but. Obviously, the more the quality of football gets better, the more exposure it gets, and the levels and the gap starts to bridge itself. So, I'm excited to take over this team and really excited at the prospect of bringing it to the next level.
Sherelle, good morning.
Good morning. I am bathed in full sunshine. I'm still up on the Sunshine Coast with the Melbourne Vixens crew trying to get through this period of time down in Melbourne, make sure we can still play our games interstate. And my balcony does look over the Mooloolaba Beach, and the sun is rising at the moment, and it's blinding me. So that's where I'm at.
You can always close.
Apologies.
Close the curtains.
Apologies.
At some stage if you needed to.
Well, we've had hail, we've had strong winds, lots of rain.
Yep.
Things are going great.
And can't open the front door. So... So we're going great.
Would you like me to shut the curtains? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
No, I'm just making sure you can see. I just want you to be able to see. That's all.
No, I'm good. I can see you guys clearly. So, as I said, we're still up here on the Sunshine Coast. We've just announced that there's been lots of different ways of looking at how we can continue the season. There were certainly some nerves heading back into Melbourne and the impact of that on us being able to then travel back interstate. We've got games coming up. We've got a bye this weekend and then a game in Perth and then a game back up here on the Sunshine Coast. So the decision's been made that instead of coming back into Melbourne and jeopardising that, we're going to stay away from Melbourne, or the team is staying away from Melbourne at this point of time to ensure our ability to travel through those borders.
So that's all very well and good for these super fit young single people. What about the coaches who have families back here in Melbourne town? How is that going down, Sherelle?
Look, it's a bit of a challenge, I've got to say. I'm certainly not complaining about the situation I'm in, as I said, up here in Mooloolaba. But my husband's at home, as everyone probably knows, with Ruby and Xavier. So that's a bit of a challenge. That's been something that's laid on Breck a little bit last minute. Obviously, this all happened very quickly, so we didn't have things in place. And a lot of our support that we get, our family live in regional Victoria, so that is a bit of that. He hasn't got that either. That
that's not 10Ks away, Sherelle. That's not 10Ks.
Bermorm is not 10Ks away from where we live.
On Friday, it's going to extend to 25.
It's not quite Bermorm territory.
That's not quite Bermorm. Yeah, so look, that's the layer of challenges that I certainly have. I'm actually the only one with young children. So that's an ongoing thing that I'm thinking about. And there's the potential that I won't be able to stay up here for the entire time that the team's away, but we're working through that at the moment.
Now, I text Breck before just to make sure he wasn't listening. How much of you is secretly really happy about the opportunity to sit in the sunshine without any kids for a bit? How much? Go on, be honest. No one's listening.
I'm not complaining. I'm not, and I know this is the weird thing. And I mean, I know last year when we were in lockdown, I was in Melbourne and my team were up in Queensland, and It's a really bizarre push and pull about going, well, I'm going to make the most of what I know. It's really tough in Victoria and you don't want to rub it in and enjoy it too much. But in a way, I'm kind of thinking, well, I'm here. I'm going to enjoy it as much as I can. So I'm. Have you watched Schitt's Creek?
Yes. How good?
Schitt's Creek on Netflix. I've been, people have been telling me for ages to watch Schitt's Creek and I have not, and I'm quite the way through that actually. It's a good one to binge, so I've been binging that and just making the most of it.
22-minute episodes. It's brilliant.
It's
brilliant.
So what do you... Have you got any restrictions on you at all? Like, we've seen situations where AFL clubs, they're interstate, but they're not allowed to do anything. What's your scenario? What are the rules and regulations that you're having to live by?
So the scenario that we're in, we left 2 weeks ago now. So we left just before any of the restrictions came into play in Melbourne. And so that has allowed us to not have any additional restrictions at the moment. The league directive is, you know, we're being mindful that we're not going around too many places, but as a general rule, we're able to live our life as normal. So if we want to go out and walk and sit down in a restaurant for dinner, then we are able to do that at the moment. So that is obviously a real positive for the group that's up here.
And then the other question I've got for you is that last year, across all sports, some enjoyed the hub because it was almost like a holiday. Others really struggled with it. But this time round, how are the athletes coping with it? Because I know from a lockdown perspective, it's certainly not exciting and new and different for us having to experience what we are at the moment.
Yeah, I certainly, it was a really, it was a big week last week, actually. We were going through lots of different scenarios around what we might be having to do over the next month or so. And for those athletes who are away for 4 months, that's a massive thing. A lot of the athletes within our group were also part of the Diamonds program. So they were also away for a period of time earlier this year. So they've had a lot of time away from home that they hadn't planned for, I guess. So, yeah, there's been some emotions to work through. There's been some logistics to work through. And it's not easy just to drop your life and move away almost literally in a couple of hours. So they're coping really well, and you do just have to get on with it. And the experience of the Vixens last year was that they did, and they had some really great success. So we're searching for that.
And how are we going? Because we got beaten by the Thunderbirds on the weekend. Second half fade out, Sherelle. We lost our way in the second half.
You're not meant to lose to them. They're not meant to be very good.
That was one I'd penciled in, I must admit. what happened there?
Well, one of the, you know, always looking for silver linings and positives. We won our first quarter for the year. So one of the things that we've been...
The first quarter you've ever won for the year? Or just the first quarter?
The first quarter. First quarter.
We've got to this, where we're worrying about...
We're counting quarters.
Well, we're not counting them as a whole, although that is what we used to do as a competition. We're not doing that anymore. But probably indicative of the way we've been starting games. We haven't been putting ourselves into a strong position early. In fact, we've been in a really tough position often at quarter time in some of the games that we've played. So that was a real positive. And as you say, we unfortunately couldn't push on in that second half. And, you know, we got back to within two with only a couple of minutes to go in that last quarter. So we're in the contest. That is one thing. We are in the contest. We just have to find a way to make sure that in those crucial moments that we're executing.
I'm keen to talk to you about Rani Samerson, who last week had the match win. I was on debut. Was 19 from 19 from the circle inside the small circle, then 8 from 10 on the outside, I think it was. Won the game after the buzzer last week for the first win of the season. So a huge high on a momentous day for her. How was her performance in the second game when it's, you know, all the emotions come down, the adrenaline's faded away a little bit? I'm fascinated to find out how she carried herself through the week and was dealt with through the week, but from her teammates and coaches as well, but also the performance on the back of that, because it was such a massive high to win the game after the buzzer in your first game ever.
Yeah, it was. And Rani didn't quite shoot the percentage that we saw her shoot on the weekend. Or the volume. So, I mean, we always knew that that backing up was going to be a really big challenge. And, you know, opposition teams have a chance to look at Rani and how she plays and ways to combat that. So largely she handled it really well. And I thought she had another really solid game. And she actually had another chance to shoot the game out, which was an amazing thing for that to happen. And I don't know if you guys have seen in netball a new defensive tactic that's been brought in the last couple of years is called the lift. So defensively, over you've got someone over the shot and the other defender in the circle throws the defender up in the air.
Like a rugby line-out.
Exactly like a rugby line-out.
Yeah.
And that was successful on a two-point shot that we tried to take late in the game. And then there wasn't enough time to kind of get that back. So that was a little bit disappointing because it was an exciting... the game was getting really exciting. And as I said, we were right back in that contest.
Scott Jamieson, the captain of Melbourne City, who has dominated proceedings throughout the entire A-League season. He's our favourite man in the A-League and he's back again. Scotty, good morning.
Morning, boys. How are we?
Going all right, buddy. How are you going?
Yeah, travelling pretty well. Travelling pretty well, obviously. Gearing up for finals coming, obviously, next week. But a game against Newcastle and Sydney to play tomorrow night, so looking forward to that.
Yes, you do. Tell me about the game on the weekend, the derby against Melbourne Victory. You had some kids, basically some toddlers out there, Scotty. What were you doing at Melbourne City?
Yeah, look, that's what we've been left with in the sense of obviously three Socceroos away and one or two, I guess, players getting rested or just trying to get over some knocks. So, yeah, look, we had a young front line in obviously Marco Tilio, Rafa, and then Naoki. I think it was about 18, 19, 20 years of age, or 17, 19, 20 years of age. So it was good. I mean, that's what we're going forward with, and there were some good performances, so it was pleasing.
So you talked about, we talked about the Socceroo impact with you a couple of weeks ago, so we knew that, but then you get a chance, because we're positioned down on the table the way you are, just to freshen some players up for a finals campaign. Has that been part of the strategy all along?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, if you look at, you know, what the bigger picture is, you know, the games we've played, we haven't thrown them away, but we've been trying to plan for the bigger picture of the finals, so... Yeah. You know, someone like Craig Noon, who's played every minute of every game, you know, trying to freshen him up. But, you know, for us, we've had to tweak things. We obviously, you're missing a 25-a-year goal scorer in Jamie McLaren. You can't really replace him, so we have to try and do things a little bit different. So, you know, these games against Victory and the Newcastle, you know, are leading towards the semi-final, you know, Friday week.
How are you handling it, Scotty, as captain of the football team? And you've been dealt the hand you have. Is there sort of an anger, or now sort of a point to prove? Yeah, we can still do it without them, or you got to be creative. How are you handling this? Because the elephant in the room is you've got the best player in the competition that can't play for you in a final series.
Exactly. Yeah, and you know, when it comes to, I guess, being real about it, if I didn't talk about it, then I'd be bullshitting people. You know, the fact that we've lost three key players, you know, to me and in my opinion, and not the clubs, I speak for myself, is, you know, the integrity of the competition lacks a little bit when you lose players like that. Also, you know, Sydney FC have lost some, but, you know, you take out the best players in the final series, it doesn't bode well. But at the same time, I accepted that probably from, you know, 8 weeks ago when I knew this. So with that, you know, came, I guess, the process of just trying to move forward, and that's what we've done. And with players like Marco Tilio, who's come on in the last few weeks, or I guess months really, has been fantastic. And, you know, we've accepted it, but we move forward with what we've got. And we definitely have the thinking of, you know, we can do something. It'll make it even sweeter if we do.
Yeah.
The fact that, you know, there's talk about possibly if we make the grand final, it'll be moved to Sydney. A lot of things are going against us, and, you know, for us to win this one, it'd be extra special.
Because that was what I was going to ask you. Do you address it internally and say, yeah, this isn't really fair, let's go out there and do something special? Or do you try and not go down that path because it's not kind of disrespectful, but, you know, there's guys that are going to come up and try and fill the breach. You want to try and give them confidence that you can still do it with them.
Well, I think it's a balance, mate. You know, like I said, if I didn't address it, there'd be an elephant in the room.
Yeah.
And if I try to say someone, you know, like Rafa Borges is like Jamie McLaren, then I'll be bullshitting them.
Yep.
So I think it's important to, you know, obviously address the three key players we've lost, but also draw a line under the sand and say that there's nothing that can be done about it. they're key, and they're key for a reason because they've been caught in the national team. But, you know, these three players or four players that will replace them, we have so much belief in them, and we don't want them to be, you know, Jamie McLaren. We want them to be the best Marco Tilley as possible. So it's a balance, mate. But, you know, one thing's for sure is that the players that come in, we have full belief in them, but we don't need them to be, you know, a Connor Metcalf or Jamie McLaren. We just need to be the best version of themselves.
Yeah, well, that's a fair point. That's a fair point. That's all you can do. So this game against Newcastle tonight, this is the last home and away game, is it not? Is that right?
It is, yeah.
Yeah,
it is.
And that's, so how do you attack that? Are you resting again tonight? Are you giving the kids a go? Are you, what's the plan for this one?
No, we're going to, I mean, Melbourne victory was, I guess, like I said, we've been building up towards the first week of the finals. So I guess it was about, you know, working on execution of a different kind of game plan, and this will be the same. Anyone who's available and fit will be looking to play, and it'll be trying to work up combinations and everything like that. So we want to win. We want to, you know, we definitely want to win and move forward. I know there's people saying you let Newcastle win because then victory wins the spoon, but you know, no, we won't be doing that. We'll be trying to win the game and play well, so we can go to the finals having known that we've had two games where we've worked on things and it's prepared us for a massive semi-final.
And that's obviously going to be really important through the final series, but what about the little, we talked about the blow not having some Socceroos there, but what about the buzz you get knowing that Matthew Leckie's going to be joining the crew next season?
Yeah, it's a great signing.
That's, you know, huge.
With the competition moving on to Channel 10, you know, and that buzz, you know, transcending to next year, and then, you know, for our club and for the league to bring back Lex, who, you know, obviously has had a very good career in Germany and with the Socceroos, it creates a buzz. And I think it's a big tick for our football club, you know, not resting on their laurels. You know, it could have been easy for the club to, I guess, try and save money in the sense of, you know, we've won the Premiership and we've had two good seasons and we'll try and save some money. No, they've gone out and they've recruited a current Socceroo who, I guess, is the current, you know, Australian captain. So it's a big tick and a well played to the staff at our club, and for him to come in and approve our team will be brilliant.
Daisy Pearce, she's just good business, full stop. She's a champ with the Melbourne Footy Club in the AFLW, doing awesome things on Channel 7. And on Monday, she's going to be very chilly. She's going down the slide as part of Big Freeze 7 on Queen's Birthday to fight MND, the Neil Danaher charity. And she's been good enough to join us this morning on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Dace.
G'day, Half. Hi, Whitey. How are you?
We are very well, thank you. What are you going to wear, Dace?
Isn't it meant to be top secret?
Oh, I don't know. I forgot about that. Yeah, well, don't tell me then. Are you excited?
You know, I'm oversharing and you know, things as you ask. It was a bit of a straw poll at home, and Bluey is a favourite character around here. So,
nice.
Yeah, there'll be a Bluey theme.
Nice.
And I thought, given he's becoming, or she is becoming, a bit of an Australian icon like Neil, and it's a big family day and meant to be a bit of fun, I've sort of gone with Bluey.
Now, I haven't, my kids are a bit old for this now, but I know it's massive business, but I haven't come across it myself.
Really?
I haven't experienced it myself.
You could actually, as an adult, it's actually very, very watchable and very entertaining.
I think it's more for the adults than the kids.
Yeah, I reckon you're right. I actually think you're right.
The colours and the cartoon and the moving characters, that's for the kids. The whole storyline is directed at the adults.
Yeah, yeah. It's really good, Half. No, it is. It really is good.
To the point, Half, where there's been times where Ben and I have looked at each other and thought, we're the only ones here on the left on the
couch.
Where are they? I hope they're safe because we want to finish this episode. Yeah.
I don't know whether, Daisy, it happens to you, but you're in the house and you say, okay, one more, and then you get to the end of the episode. No, there's only one more. And then the episode was so good, you sort of say to the kids, actually, yeah, you can watch another one because we want to watch it more than the kids want to watch one more.
So get into it. Don't worry about all these Netflix series, Go Bluey.
Right, okay.
As we see kids.
Okay, I can do that. I can find that on the remote.
When you were asked to do it, you weren't tempted, Daisy, to say, oh, look, the knee's a bit sore. It probably isn't a good thing to do.
No, not at all. I mean, all the excuses are there, aren't they? But when it's Neil Danaher asking you to do it,
you just say,
where do you want me? What do I have to do? And he could have you doing anything, given the inspiration that he is and the amount of work and sacrifice he's made. I mean, gee, there's no excuse in the world that would stack up.
Yeah, absolutely. And, Daisy, you've been involved with Melbourne from the start, even when it was just Melbourne versus the Bulldogs all those years ago. Have you had much of a connection with Neil through?
I've met him a number of times, yeah, and been involved in different capacities with the Fight MND guys, going to different fundraisers and things, and been lucky enough to see some of the pump-up speeches he's given and the talks he's given in and around MND around this time of the year. So just an absolute privilege to have gotten to know him and his family a little bit without being super close. But, yeah, just an absolute honour and privilege to get to know him. And part of I'm really pumped to go to the Big Freeze on Monday just to see him. Like, there's something in there. I just want to go there and give him a big hug. Like, if that was all that I was doing for the day, well, then I'd make the effort to go there and get in the ice just to do that. He's an incredible man and just a constant source of inspiration.
Yeah, well said. Well said. He's just a remarkable human being, Neil Denahan, without a doubt. And that Melbourne connection is nice. Days, and you announced the other day that there's another one in you. I was waiting for a LeBron James-style decision, sort of sitting on the director's chairs, and I'm going to go around one more year type thing from you. But one more year, you reckon?
Well, unofficially at that point. The exclusive interview with Tom Morris was an Instagram DM saying, I think I'll go again, but I'm not sure. So journalism has deteriorated in the last little while, hasn't it?
It's unlike Tom to go big on little things like that.
But no, I think I will go again one more. That's where it stands.
Well, Tom will be listening. He loves the program. You've had a bit of a fillip for whatever you might do and whether or not you're second-guessing yourself. I reckon that might have been straightened up a little bit yesterday. You got two All-Australians in.
Yes. Always a bit of an interesting time. People come and go. We had a couple of retirements too. Meg Downey, Tegan Cunningham announced there, hanging up the boots, which is always sad. Two big contributors to the club. And then Chantelle Emerson heading down to the Cats as part of the Liz Purcell trade. So it is an exciting time with players coming in, but sad to see some of your loved teammates go, and that's just the business of footy. But, yeah, the players we get in, really exciting. Liz obviously coming off an ACL, so the change in season won't help the start of her campaign. But just such an exciting player. I think she's 21 and All-Australian, plays mid and forward, so can't have enough of those in your side, can you, Half?
No.
Obviously, you'd know a lot about, but just pumped to work with her. I mean, a young woman with all the talent in the world, and really keen to get to work and get her footy back to where we all know it can be. But I think, really excited to get them both to the club.
So we were talking to Scotty Jamieson before the break from Melbourne City, and after the signing of Matthew Leckie of Socceroos coming to Melbourne City next season, and asked if he was involved in the recruitment or the helping of the recruiting of these players. Are you involved in trying to land a few of these big fish?
I am privy to the conversations going on of what's happening and who they're looking at and that kind of thing. And, I mean, I have conversations with our list manager, Todd, all the time, but he does an amazing job and I don't have to do much. I mean, it's just, conversations that we have because we both are really passionate about the team and footy, so not directly involved. I don't know Liv very well, just have admired her from afar and had little snippets of interaction with her, but, yeah, excited to have her coming into the team. And Tay, I've known since she was a 16-year-old playing rep footy when I thought I was a baby myself, and then there's 16-year-old Taylor. So I've had contact with her over the journey, and she's picked up the phone to me over a whole range of things, whether it's things we're both navigating for the first time with social media and having this, dealing with a profile that you never thought you'd have or you didn't have yesterday. All of those kind of things we've had conversations over. So I had a chat to her once I knew she was looking for a new home and that I heard Melbourne was on her radar, and it was more a conversation, not a come to Melbourne kind of sell, but just honest about what our club offers and who we are and the type of people that we value. And that was that. I sort of didn't want to put any pressure on us to go one way or another, but I'm glad it's landed this way.
The Sanctum of the Magpies with our very favourite man from the Black and White Town, Taylor Adams, who's back again. Hello, Taylor.
Good morning, team. How are we?
Oh, going very well. You sound like you're out and about. Where are you?
Yeah, I'm just sitting outside the footy club. Did an early morning rehab session with a few of the boys this morning. So just start cooling off, huh?
That's a very early morning rehab session.
Yeah, we got up in the sweat room and just had a bit of fun, which was good.
What'd you do?
Circuit. I won't bore you with the details, Whitey, but got the heart rate up and dropped a couple of kilos of sweat. So it was good. Good way to start the morning.
Is it true you lose more weight doing physical exercise early in the morning before you have anything to eat? Is that right? Is that true?
I have no idea.
I'm not sure about that. Does something for
calories
metabolism.
Calories in versus calories out, I think.
Yeah, it's all that sort of stuff. There is something about metabolism with that, Whitey, but it's a topic for another day because we're not really into that sort of stuff.
Well, I'm trying to be. Unsuccessful.
I want to know how long you'll be doing that rehab class for, Taylor. How much longer you got to go?
Oh, I won't play this week. I'll be back after the bye, which, yeah. If we're playing a game, maybe next week I would have a better chance, but yeah, given the buys next week for us, I'll sit this one out and be back after the bye, hopefully for an uninterrupted second half of the year.
Yes, well, that would be what all Magpie fans are hoping for, and of course, us and you as well, because we want to see you out there doing your thing. What did you make of the weekend's performance? Obviously a fantastic result. It could have gone either way at one stage there, but what did you make of the resilience your group showed to fight the fight with the police and the bus and all sort of stuff, and then get out there and take on the Crows as well?
Yeah, no, that word resilience is probably just sums up the performance. You know, we spoke about it yesterday as a whole football department, the way that everyone adapted to what was thrown at us, you know, mid last week from Wednesday 5 p.m. onwards, everyone was in a quarantine scenario where I'm sure everyone's sort of aware of the details. Friends and family and housemates and all the rest were all locked up inside the house for a couple of days, and the players that weren't able to do that went to a hotel for two nights, or three nights, and you obviously had to travel to Adelaide on the game day, spend 6 hours sitting around in the cricket nets at Adelaide Oval, and then go out and play, you know, against a team in front of their home crowd who have been playing really good footy. So yeah, we were absolutely stoked with the way that the whole football department handled that situation, and you know, for the guys that went across there and the 23 that played to walk away with a win, you know, under those circumstances was an awesome job.
So I'm interested, Taylor. I mean, it wasn't the prettiest game of football, but you got the win. How much of a difference does that make to the footy club just getting those 4 points when it comes to the mood and the direction of the footy team, considering what you've had to sort of endure over a fairly arduous 2021?
Yeah, it's obviously a bit of reward for effort. We weren't too concerned about the aesthetics of it. You know, given the scenario around the game and what the players and staff had to endure, you know, don't underestimate getting on a plane at 7:30 a.m. and, you know, sitting around for 6 hours getting COVID tests and laying on beanbags, waiting for the game to start. Don't underestimate how much that takes out of you as an athlete. You know, the game didn't change. Adelaide didn't have to deal with those circumstances, and the guys just dug in. There was no complaints. The game was there to be won with 15 minutes to go, and our players were able to get the job done. So really pleasing. You know, for a relatively young group again over there, we, you know, obviously missing some experience and relied on some of our experience that we're playing to really lift us in that second half when the Crows had the momentum and were really coming at us. So, yeah, the boys will definitely take some confidence out of that. Obviously, there's some parts of the game that we could have done better, but all in all, that determination and that resilience to fight it out to that last minute and get the 4 points was awesome.
Yeah, and that was what I was kind of alluding to with the question. It wasn't so much, I mean, the 4 points are fantastic with what you've gone through, but as a senior player, to see some of those young players show those sorts of characteristics, I would imagine that would give the group a lot of confidence, the senior guys, that from a cultural perspective, that these guys can stand up to the pressure of the outside noise, but also the resilience of what you had to actually go through just to play the game, that they could still perform.
Yeah, those wins are really important for any group. and we've had a few of those over the last 3 or 4 years, and they often get referred back to, you know, in 12, 15 months' time when you need to find a bit of that determination and grit. Yeah, to sort of reflect on those games that, you know, no one sort of expects you to win, and you know, things aren't necessarily going your way or have gone your way in the lead-up to the game. You know, it's probably similar to that final we played last year over in Perth, similar to another game over in Perth in 2019 where the guys went over and got the job done, gave us the top four finish. So, you know, those games are really important. You know, we had some young players. Caleb Poulter really stood up. Callum Brown coming on as that medical sub had a great 35% game time. So Trent Bianco looks like he's going to be a super player for us. Yes. So heaps of pleasing aspects about the game. For those guys, a lot of, you know, three or four of those guys hadn't sung the Collingwood song yet. So to see them do that, you know, surrounded by the support staff that have sacrificed so much for us, not only last week, but throughout the last 18 months. It was just awesome for the football club.
It's nice to see Jamie Elliott back out there too. Billy was something else, set the game alight. Yeah. Of course, we talked about his four goals in the first quarter on Monday, but didn't mention his match winner coming through the centre square and running through 50 and barreling that one from deep. That was as impressive as I've seen from Jamie Elliott ever. A, the fact that he was in the centre bounce in the first place, and then to be able to finish like that, he must be feeling really good about himself this week.
Yeah, he put a power of work in, Jamie. Obviously, I spent a bit of time with him in rehab, and he was just a... I guess he has that sort of influence where when he puts his mind to something and he's very, very methodical in the way that he planned out how he was going to approach his rehab. You kind of just knew, as a teammate, you kind of just knew that he was going to come in and have an impact. He put so much work in, was really diligent. You know, we all know what sort of player he is, but he's in super nick. You know, he's dropped a couple of kilos, looks really lean, moving really well, and it would have been nice to have two of him on Saturday afternoon. You know, his ability to kick goals up forward was really good, but his pressure and ball hunting ability around the midfield was also something that we needed throughout that second and third quarter. So, it was a really pleasing return for him.
There was a bit of a change of position for the skipper too. Pendles went to half back. He's played sort of half forward mid role this year, but now certainly on the weekend he was half back. Is that what we'll see, do you reckon, for the rest of the season, or is he just one of those guys that Bucks can move the magnet wherever he feels he needs to be any given week?
Yeah, obviously they're trying to have a look at Pendles across a number of roles. You know, when things weren't going that well in the midfield, he was probably the one that went back in there and turned it for us. So I texted him after the game and said, "Don't get too comfortable down back, mate." I think he's clearly still a very good midfielder. So it's a luxury having a player like that where, you know, obviously he understands the game really well. He's across all roles, and there's just specifics of what roles are required, or what specifics are required in different roles, and he's able to go and execute in most parts of the ground. So, yeah, it's nice being able to do that. I think he's best suited through our midfield. You know, that real sergeant in there that sort of can connect our backs, mids and forwards all together. So, you probably will see him in different positions as the year goes on. But, yeah, I like seeing him through the midfield.
Let's talk to cricket. David Saker's been appointed the coach of the Melbourne Renegades, back in action in the red. That's my team, and we need to turn things around. I reckon we've got the right man back in charge. David, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you going?
We are well, mate. We are well. I'm very happy with this appointment, David, because I'm a Renegades man and I've had enough of losing. Can you help me out?
Yeah, it hasn't been the greatest of 2 years for the red team, but, 2020 cricket, you can turn around quite quickly. And you know in sport half that things are never as bad as you really think they are. So I think we can turn it around quite quickly. Obviously need to recruit well with our overseas players, but we think we've got some good local talent, and we can compete for finals this season.
The overseas component's interesting because seemingly in the last couple of Big Bash editions, we've had overseas players for a period of the season as opposed to the full length. Is that one of the challenges you face?
Yeah, and this season there could be a draft. I'm not sure what they're doing this year, but Over the last few years, you could pick your own players, but I think with COVID last year and before that, the length of our tournament, it's sometimes hard to lock players in for the whole tournament, particularly, big prize recruits sort of thing. So you're probably looking at more the fringe international players that really want to make a name for themselves, or someone that's just wanting to come out badly to Australia and play in the BBL. But this year there could be a draft system, but that hasn't been confirmed. So that would make it quite interesting as well.
Yeah.
Will it be three, David, overseas players again this year?
Yeah, that's what it is. You can have up to three, depending on how much you're willing to spend. But you're definitely going to get two. If you've got some money left over, you'll probably go for a third one. We're pretty strong in our batting. I know our stats probably didn't show that last year. Obviously, Finchie and Sean Marsh, who are two classy players, didn't make the scores that you would like them to make, but I think we need to probably recruit in more an all-rounder or a spinning all-rounder or a couple of good fast bowlers. But, we'll have a look at the draft if it is that system. If it's not, I've already touched base with some players overseas. So, we'll wait and see in that space.
You coming back, how important was it to you? Because you're coach of Victoria, coach of the Renegades, and you're doing really well, really, really well. And then you got poached by the Australian team. Is it a kind of unfinished business that you want to come back and get back going again with Victorian cricket?
Oh, look, I'm always very grateful and happy to be involved with the Victorian system. Obviously, I played a long time there. I've got some fond memories of being involved with that team, and obviously got the opportunity to coach them back in 2015-16, I think it was, and we had some good success in the Shield team. The Renegades didn't have a great year that year, but it was my first go at it, and there's no doubt I'm a better coach now than then. But I've just learned around Darren Lehman. I was with Sri Lankan cricket for 18 months, and Nicky Arthur was interesting to be working with. So I think I'm a better coach now, and I think it's just like everything, you get better in everything you do, and cricket, you can never master the game, so you've got to keep learning as you go. But I'm really grateful for the opportunity, and I'm really excited that, I'm back at a place I really wanted to be.
So what's the timeline now for you? When do you really need to get busy?
Well, I've sort of started to get busy with some phone calls to people, and I was wanting to fly down and get to meet some of the younger players that I don't know that well face-to-face and have some meetings with Aaron Finch and Andrew Lynch, our list managers. But with COVID at the moment, I haven't been able to get down there. So I'm in Queensland, and I don't know if you know that, but when I got the job with Australia, I moved to Queensland. But I'll be coming back down quite often, and throughout the tournament, I'll be with the players and with the group wherever we travel. But I'm looking forward to getting my hands dirty and starting to get to know some of the players that I don't know that well.
Am I reading between the lines there might be a little Sri Lankan influence coming to the Renegades?
we had some really interesting spinning all-rounders, and they're always pretty handy in your team. And with the Sri Lankan players, they're not always that well-known, which is quite handy in international in cricket these days, because everyone knows everybody, really. There's no real secrets generally, and that's why when some of the Afghanistan players and spinners came on straight up, they were really hard to sort of work out because no one really seen them. So I think there might be a Sri Lankan influence for sure.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.